103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. One of 3.2 Dublin City FM, The Sod Show with Brian Green and Peter Donegan, Katrina Redmond on the blogs and podcast with you until 3:30. Coming up on today's programme, an interview with Fionn O'Nuaillean, somebody The Sod Show have met on numerous occasions but are going to meet again, I think, this weekend as we go down to Waterford and the Grow It Yourself Festival, which we'll be talking about more in the programme today. But if you're going to be in Waterford this weekend, do come to the guys with the microphones. That's The Sod Show. Mainly Peter Donegan, actually. News in the inbox. Irish Garden Plant Society are having a plant sale Saturday, 17th of October 2015, from 12 noon till 2 p.m. It's in the Trinity College Botanic Gardens, Palmerstown Park, Dartry, Dublin 6. It's from the Botany Department of TCD. There's going to be herbaceous, there's going to be shrubs, there's going to be rare and unusual plants. That's Saturday, 17th of October 2015. In Dartry, Dublin 6. Also, we have a note in from We Share Dublin 3. This is something that we are going to have to cover in the future. It's an idea that allows people to contact some volunteers who'll come and take the fruit from their trees and give it to people who need that food. An absolutely wonderful idea. We Share Dublin 3. Sodshow.com/news for all the details on these items that I'm reading out. Let's get to this week's interview of the week. Peter Donegan is talking with Fionn.
It's Friday, it's 3 p.m. It is indeed the Sod Show. There's no easy way to, introduce this fine gentleman who I know a long time at this stage. But Fionn O'Nuaillean, how the are you?
I'm doing well, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Explain to people who are not aware of who you are, who are you?
I am the son of man. No. I'm, that's a really tough one, Peter.
Let's change this. We first met how many years ago?
We would have met the very first bloom. So we're talking 9 years ago. We were both in here putting in our kind of first show gardens. I'd kind of done Garden Heaven and small bits and pieces before that. But bloom was new. It was the inaugural year. And I guess we were both excited to get in and kind of, you know, try and make a show that was better than the Irish Chelsea.
You did a garden which involved concrete walls, if I remember, year one. And bear with me, folks, because this show or this radio show or podcast now isn't as such about bloom. We're referencing it because it happened June just gone, June Bank Holiday weekend, that is. And it is the connection between myself and Fionn. But bear with us on this journey. I'll get to where we want to go just in a little bit. But you had concrete walls in 07.
I did, yeah. And it was just really, I mean, that's the learning experience, you know. Now, the whole idea behind that garden was that was a garden created for teenagers with ADD, ADHD. And the whole idea with the concrete walls was it created a sound space that people could have their time out in. So the barrier between these two curved walls filtered out all of the noise and provided a tranquility space. That garden was called Resistance is Everything. And it was all about slug-resistant plants for the bloom audience. But really, it was the children got an opportunity to say the stuff that they wanted to resist. So we had a television monitoring it, rather like Zoo TV, and it was flashing up resist drugs, resist gun crime, resist peer pressure, you know. So it was a bit funky at the time.
He says funky at the time. For those who aren't aware, let's again, we have a relationship, not, you know, we know each other well, but Fionn is slightly bigger than me. He's got a bald head and he's got a beard. Without joking, I'm not knocking you and saying this, but
ahead.
It's that game of guess who where you can turn your man's head upside down and the beard goes on the top and all of a sudden you know, one of those fake. Yeah. If you're a child in my head, that makes absolute sense. Whereas I would be extremely good looking and all of those things. You've kind of shot the fame, and the joke we had before we sat down together was, I can't believe that 9 years on, I'm interviewing you. Therefore, you are more famous than me by default. You're to fast track through the gardens. You released your first book last year. You posted me a copy of that and signed it. And a couple of months ago, weeks ago, I received a copy of your latest book through the post as well. So to break it down, Bobby Brown, as I like to say, your most recent gardens in bloom and abroad aside, your first book became what? And I, in the lead up to this, go to sideshow.com, take a look at the photograph of Fionn, and then bear in mind the next answer that he's about to give me, which is your latest book is what?
My latest book, believe it or not, is Beauty Treatments from the Garden. Now, to qualify that, I do look like Brad Pitt from the back. Basically what happened was last year I had a book out called Forced Out from the Garden, which was a very blokey man's book. It's what happens if you kind of chop off a finger with the strimmer, or, you know, you have a burn incident, or cut yourself in any way. And it was based on kind of common ethnobotany, which herbs are good for which different treatments. But I met so many people at Bloom last year who were looking to live a kind of a chemical-free life. This whole concern about parabens in cosmetics and how they bind to estrogen receptors and it can cause breast cancer and ovarian cancer. So with having a contract with Mercia Press to write three books based on kind of herbalism, simple herbalism from the garden, I thought the next one should definitely be on beauty treatments. So it's not a book about how to make lipstick or blusher or pretty yourself up. It's about actual treatments. If you have psoriasis, what's good for that? If you have a fungal nail infection, what's good for that? And then it's looking at some of the more common stuff that people would use, like facial peels and teeth whiteners, and finding the natural solutions in the garden that's not going to put you in harm's way. Because I don't think you should suffer for your looks, no matter how you look. And if you want to be drop-dead gorgeous, you should be able to be drop-dead gorgeous without actually dropping dead from trying to be gorgeous.
Yeah, and there is a joke in there that I've made with a couple of mates of mine where I don't actually have to work too hard at looking this good all the time, and others, yeah, okay, that's a side joke. Okay, let's backtrack on this one, and we'll go back to the very, very start of the interview as such. We both started building gardens together, and I guess my living is I still build gardens for a living. You built a garden, it had construction or / concrete involved in it. Let's not get stuck on that one. But you ended up going to essentially, if you don't mind me calling it this just for the minute, but in short, kind of not herbal remedies, but quick remedies from the garden. What changed within those 9 years, and how did you end up doing that? Were you always into going out and rubbing that bit of tea tree pea oil under your earlobe, or and then the question, I guess, is how did you end up putting concrete in the first garden? Not to get stuck in the first garden again, but how on God's earth did you end up at this?
Yeah, well, you see, the first garden, even at that, was for a kind of a drop-in centre for early school leavers. And the whole idea there within that garden was to give them a voice, to give them a connection to an industry that they might want to find themselves in. So we were looking at actual physical construction. We were looking at horticulture. And then within that, the kids were getting to express their own opinions, which was the kind of resist peer pressure, all that sort of stuff. But as well, in terms of coming up with the leaflets and the posters and the design. So there was a big healing aspect to that garden. And that's my background. Even before I was there, I would have worked in Cara Cheshire Homes. I would have worked in different hospitals and different hospices. And my thing would have been sensory gardens, even though I wouldn't have called them specifically sensory gardens. I might have done a garden that would, you know, if say I would have a private client, if they had problems with their adrenal system, I would avoid using yellow in the garden because yellow sets off the adrenals. So my background would be using kind of colour therapy, healing energies, herbs, all that sort of stuff to combine it together. This is how I ended up being called a holistic gardener. Now, I didn't set out to become the holistic gardener. That's just how it happens, because that's the sort of gardening that I was interested in, you know, how a garden can heal you.
Okay, so I studied horticulture for 4 years. There's the sideshow bingo witches. I used to grow plants under my bed. I had a grifter. I used to put compost on the handlebars, buy it at Newlands Cross, spend my 5 weeks pocket money, 20 pence a week, saving up, no sweets at all. You, on the other hand, studied what?
Well, I studied horticulture, but beyond, once I finished that, I got into herbalism. I studied herbalism, I studied aromatherapy. I got more and more into the holistic side of stuff. So I was studying kind of energy field therapies and you know, clinical therapies that would mean that I could be able to translate an occupational therapy into a horticultural therapy. So I'm qualified as a naturopath, so I bring that with me through the gardening. So in terms of if somebody's had a stroke and you want to improve pinch force, there's lots of stuff you can do with kind of spongy balls in a clinical setting, or you can get outside and actually garden, and the gripping of tools, the pricking on of plants into a larger pot all improves that hand action. It straightens up the carpal tunnel zone, it helps hand-to-eye coordination. So the garden is just a natural healing therapy in itself.
Do people, and I'll back this question up ever so slightly, so I have stood at gardens that I have made in the Phoenix Park at a national show competition level, and I've had people, you might say, heckle me with a very eloquent voice, but heckle me nonetheless because they didn't maybe appreciate, I'm being quite eloquent in how I say this, there were on one or two occasions expletives used, and that's absolutely fine, and that happens when you've got 100,000+ people coming through the gates. Do you get people come up to you specifically because of, it's not homeopathy as such, but do you get people come up to you and say, come on, you're a quack doctor, this is horseshit, do you get an element of that?
I get two sides to that. I remember I put in a wildflower meadow in the second or third year of bloom, and I got a gentleman threatening to ring the Joe Duffy show because the state was somehow sponsoring the proliferation of weeds because I had wildflowers in his garden. So you get that element. The other side of it then is I get, like last year, it was very much like embarrassing bodies on the road. I did have people take off their shoes and socks and show me their, their corns and look for the treatment. So a lot of people know that they're going to get proper healing advice firsthand. I'm hoping to try and avoid a lot of that as we move on a bit. The books really cover how you do it yourself at home. And I'm not somebody who has a clinical practice somewhere that you come in and you strip off and you show me, what's wrong with you. And I go, okay, here you go, you can fix it. Even though I have a medicinal botany background, it's more about getting the information and being able to support with your own health practitioner what's best for you.
Okay, and just to clarify, don't go knocking up the fiend's house, right, with your mother-in-law and go, look at her feet, look, she's got a boil on the end of it. That's not how it works. Essentially, your job is garden making, albeit with a difference. Is that correct?
That's it, yeah. That's it. I mean, I create healing spaces. That's what I've done all along, I know, in terms of what we've done over bloom, there was a year where I was looking at an invasive plant species and we crashed a spaceship into a hill. But again, within that, we were looking at these invasive plants and what benefit they can actually have. Like Crocosmia, which is invasive all through Cork and Kerry, that's used for testicular cancer in Peru and South America. So there's lots of stuff that's out there that we've forgotten or that we don't know about yet. And ethnobotany is a fascinating subject. It's basically how people, care about plants or what they use plants for. So it's, why do you give a rose on Mother's Day? Or why do we have a Christmas tree? But it's also what plants do what. So while most people know that kind of strawberries are really healthy and are full of vitamin C, strawberries also have alpha hydroxyl acids, which I know from my botany background. But looking at the kind of beauty treatment industry, alpha hydroxyl acids are used as an exfoliant to clean your skin. So why can't you use a natural strawberry instead of going out and buying something with a whole lot of chemicals and junk in it that just has strawberry flavour?
Wow, deoxyribonucleic acid is my favourite one, or DNA to the layperson. And if you're short on that, I think my other one is probably the botanical Latin for privet hedge, which is, or variegated, which is Ligustrum ovalifolium aurea variegata. And that will heal absolutely nothing, but it'll take up a little bit of time on your Saturday if you own a hedge cutters. Listen, we're going to get back to the books part. The connection between us is obviously show garden building. Brian, it's back to you in the studio. Part two, we're talking books. And what do you actually do when you strim off your left finger? What do you do? I don't know. We're about to find out. Okay.
Thanks, Peter. I'll keep my rigid digits safe here in the studio. Let's go to a song of the week. Let's play the Pixies. Here comes your man. Nothing like the Pixies on a Friday afternoon on Dublin City FM. The Sod Show till 3:30. Let's get back to Peter Donegan.
Okay, during that song, thanks, Brian. Fien was again trying to make me feel good about myself. It's not working. It's not working at all, at all. Okay, so we're going to go with this. We're going to go back to book one, and book one was the title.
First Aid from the Garden.
Okay, two things. I have a book at home which essentially is a kind of a what you can eat and what you can't eat in the garden kind of a type book. Based on plant identification, but it would have things like, you know, you can eat the buds or leaves of the hawthorn, you can sloes, damsons, what mushrooms I guess not to pick. And what ones to pick. Yeah, okay, there's a double answer there. On one of your things in your first book, you had a note that the dock leaf was considered as a cure for the nettle sting. In the book that I have, it says that it is purely a placebo.
No, most people think that, like, I mean, for everybody, their kind of first encounter with ethnobotany or with medicinal botany is when your mum or your dad rubs a dock leaf when you've been stung at the age of 3 or 4, and you remember that. Now, a lot of people think it's a placebo effect because it's just somebody who cared for you took it away, but it turns out that the sap of docks and sorrels all contain antihistamine juice, where when you get stung by a nettle, your body flushes itself with histamine to cause a reaction so that you know you've been injured. So they naturally cancel each other out. It's like acid and alkaline, you know. So that's what it does. So it's called the dock leaf because it was a doctor plant. So, you know, this placebo thing, I mean, even in terms of conventional medicine, if you're suffering from anxiety, very often the pill will come in a blue colour, because blue already has a psychological effect on you to make you feel calm. If you're somebody who needs a stimulant or a pickup or a pep, it'll come in a red capsule, again, because psychologically you're there. So, you know, placebo is often thrown around in terms of natural healing, but yet it's fully accepted in terms of the conventional allopathic medicine that's out there. But really, all of the stuff that I cover in the books are all stuff that have some level of scientific validation. It's not folklore.
Scientific we like. To the next question, what do you do if you strim off your finger with a strimmer?
Cry. No, but, and then you pick up your finger, you wrap it in plastic or paper. It's good if you can get some Brussels sprouts or frozen veg. Don't make a direct connection between the actual finger and the cut and the frozen, because that can cause a damage. Get to the hospital as quick as possible and they will reattach it for you. Where the herbal medicine comes in is if you can drink ginkgo tea post-surgery. Ginkgo is the best herbal treatment to improve peripheral circulation. So it keeps the little capillaries and the reattachments that have been made in the finger alive. So you have a 75 to 80% more successful surgery, replantation surgery. Now, ginkgo is banned in Ireland, and the reason why it's banned in Ireland is because it's so good for peripheral circulation. It's really, really good to allay dementia. And there's a lot in kind of modern pharma that they want you spending your money that way, but also because it improves peripheral circulation, it's also very good for erectile dysfunction. So, you know, whether you're recreationally using your ginkgo tea or whether you're looking to take your ginkgo as a serious medicine, while it's proscribed as a herbal treatment, it's still available in garden centres. It's still okay for you to grow it in your garden. And actually, all you have to do is pluck off a few leaves, pour some boiling water over it, and you get all of the ginkgo sides into your system.
Ginkgo, I think, I'm not open to correction on this. Ginkgo biloba is probably how I would know that name, and considered to be the oldest surviving tree in the world. Young children in your life, friends, nephews, cousins, children, do you find that when you're at Jimmy's fourth birthday, fifth birthday, communion, bar mitzvah, whatever the case may be, do they come up and go, look at us, I don't know, his eyebrows, rub a pebble on that and lick your eyebrows sideways. Do you get that?
I get a lot of that, yeah. It's just because people know that. But sure, that's what I talk about anyway. Do you know, if I'm in a garden centre and somebody is beside me and they're picking out a plant, I just have this urge or compulsion to tell them, do you know that this is edible, or do you know that this is a medicine or whatever? So, you know, I'm completely at home with that. I mean, that's it. I try to live a natural life. I mean, there's a reason why I got into gardening in the first place. It's that connection to nature, you know. And for there's this great thing that gardeners live for 15 years longer than non-gardeners.
I hope so.
Right, and it's that thing, it's that we're actually out in sunshine, and the sunshine and the blue wavelength of natural sky resets your circadian rhythms, so you get a better night's sleep and your hormones are more balanced for the next day. People who work in offices under artificial lights are under stress all day. Their adrenal system is having to pump more adrenaline to compensate with tiredness. That 3 o'clock slump isn't a food issue at all. It's the fact that you've been deprived of your burst of circadian balance. And really all you need to do is nip outside for 15 minutes and catch a bit of sunshine. Even a bit of overcast will do it for you.
Pop quiz round, and these are 1 to 5 word answers only. The last time you had a McDonald's?
Oh, probably when I was 12.
Your favourite tipple or drink, beverage?
Oh, Bacardi and Coke.
Wow, jeepers, okay, let me see. What was the last thing you had in a sandwich?
Lettuce and nasturtium leaves this morning.
Are you just saying that because this is on radio?
Oh, that's what I had this morning. Yeah.
Your favourite thing to eat at the weekends when nobody is watching, and what movie would you be watching while you're eating that?
Oh, chocolate anytime, whether people are watching or not watching. Favourite movie at the weekend? That's a tough one. God, I can't think. Yeah.
Last final album you bought?
I would have been Radiohead's last album.
Very good. Well, I'm impressed with that. Last concert you were at?
Last concert I was at was the Pixies. Yeah, Marley Park. Yeah.
Last piece of clothing you bought?
Pair of work boots for coming into Bloom.
Okay, last piece of fashion clothing or type clothing you bought?
I bought a dark navy shirt for about 2-3 weeks ago.
Who's your favourite best-looking gardener that you know, horticulturist, I should say, that you know?
Other than Mr. Donegan, it may have to be the dapper Mr. Graham.
Who's that? Gary? Oh, for God's sake, we cannot go 1 year without hearing the voice come up. Next thing you're going to do this year in 2015 before Christmas?
I'm trying to set up a project called Bloom and Transition, and that name may change. And the whole idea is to bring transition year students to Bloom next year, to maybe bring 15 different schools. And the whole idea is to look at, it being 1916, to look at how, you know, that part of the proclamation that says all the children cherished equally. I want to invite children up to Bloom to create gardens that are either going to change their environment or change their society. And to make Bloom transition itself away from status anxiety gardens that are all often appear here, and try and get it to be more of a social exchange, to bring a bit of dynamism back into that. I mean, for young kids, they're great. They have up to primary school, they have incredible edibles, the food dudes, all that sort of stuff. Then you get into secondary school, and unless horticulture is absolutely in your blood at that point, the next time you pick up something is when you retire, you know. And it's just, we need to get that generation turned on to food science, to horticulture, to the wonderfulness of nature and engaging with nature.
The next book is out when?
So the next book then, Beauty Treatments is just out now. The next book will be Common Complaints from the Garden, and that will be out probably May next year.
So that's 2016. And if people, Fionn, want to buy, and I highly recommend that you do, without question, I know Paul Smith gave a lovely review of the book on Sideshow, up on sideshow.com, that is. But if people want to get their hands on a copy, how do they go about it?
It's in all nationwide bookstores, Eason's, Dubray Books, everywhere, and it's on Amazon.
Excellent stuff. Fionn O'Nolan, it has been a genuine, as it always is, pleasure to meet you again. Thank you so much for coming on the Sideshow.
Thanks a million, Peter. That was great.
Thanks, Fionn. Thanks, Peter. It's been a whiz whirlwind of a show. It's already over. Listen, if you're in Waterford this weekend, do go to the Harvest Fest. Go to the Grow It Yourself conference that's happening in 2 Marquees. The Sod Show will be there with microphones. If you see us, come over, say hello. We are talking to people and recording. That's how we make radio. And we will be back next week on the radio on Dublin City FM. right here at 3 o'clock. If you want to get in touch during the week, at Sodshow on Twitter, and info@sodshow.com is the email address. From himself, the producer Peter Donegan, and herself Katrina Redmond, who looks after the blogs and the podcast, from myself Brian Green, have a great week. Talk to you soon. See ya. Bye bye.